Hey, I'm Shimon, and this is the Faith Through Music podcast. Here we speak with artists, creators, and musicians about how faith influences their music and how music has influenced their faith. As a rabbinical student and concert photographer, music has played a key role in my religious experience. I believe that through these conversations, we will all be able to gain a deeper appreciation of the transformative power of music. Today I had the pleasure to speak with Hard Charlie. Charlie is a rapper, a rocker, and a psychotherapist. He uses his music to inspire and uplift people of all backgrounds. We discussed the role of music in therapy and mental health, the impact of Matisyahu's music on his religious and spiritual journey, the music that inspired his creative process, and so much more. Charlie, thank you so much for joining me.
Dude, it's a huge pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. So let's get this thing started. Where did your passion for music start? What got you into making music and creating and all that kind of stuff?
That is a very good question. It was interesting. You know, as a kid, so I'm only 5'4". I tried playing basketball, but every time I played, I would get disqualified because I'd bring a stepladder out on the court. And let's just say it didn't go over very hot. But music always was something that kind of came naturally to me. My mom plays the piano. My grandma plays the piano. When I was a little kid, my mom had me first playing piano. Then I played clarinet, which is a great way to lose friends because unless you're playing klezmer music, it is not a cool instrument at all.
It's not the way to jam out.
No,
that's for sure.
Definitely not the way to jam out. And then the thing that like really did it for me was my sister was actually learning how to play glockenspiel, because after all, every young Jewish child needs to learn how to play glockenspiel over the course of their life. And her glockenspiel teacher was this wonderful man named Tony Caselli of blessed memory. He was a righteous Gentile. And he basically had this giant drum set. And I saw this thing and I was like, I want to play that. And, you know, playing the drums was a lot of fun because back in the day, I used to love the Spice Girls. What could I say? And I was a little kid and I would turn on the Spice Girls and he taught me how to play along. And I was like, oh my God, and practicing was no longer, I had to read sheet music. It was like literally turn on the radio and just play along. And the drums opened a lot of doors for me. So the first thing that the drums did, aside from teaching me rhythm, is it actually allowed me to learn how to dance. So throughout high school, I used to work as a professional dancer for a DJ company. You've seen them at like weddings and bar mitzvahs, clapping my hands side to side. And I was making really good money doing that. So I learned how to dance from playing the drums. But the second and more important thing is I learned how to rap. And that opened up tons and tons of doors, because when you see like, you know, a short white Jewish kid who could actually spit, like people were very like surprised by that.
Interesting. How did that transition go from like straight up drums to like 808s and stuff like that, which is kind of like a different kind of, it's still drums, but it's like a different, different setup.
You know, and to be honest with you, when I first started rapping, I wasn't doing any like electronic computer production. It was all like actual instrumentation. And so to be honest with you, I like the change into the electronic stuff. I like how diverse things could be. I mean, one of the things that I've tried playing with is kind of combining the two, having the acoustic set with the 808s and, you know, a lot of different snares and stuff like that. You know, that's always been something really, really fun for me to play with. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of been the transition.
That's interesting, because I feel like we talked about this a little bit before the podcast, but how that's kind of where a lot of rap and rock are starting to go a little bit these days. Some people who are big fans of rock might not like that so much, but it seems like it's kind of, you have a lot of artists that are fusing rap and rock in a very interesting way that maybe hasn't been done entirely before.
Absolutely. The album that I'm like obsessed right now, Machine Gun Kelly.
Oh my God, that album is amazing.
Dude, it is a brilliant album. Travis Barker is the producer on it. I mean, look, Machine Gun Kelly had one good song. His Eminem diss was fantastic.
Yes, that was an amazing
And I
track.
Love Eminem, but he definitely won that battle. It was very, very well done. But this album is just magnificent. It is, I mean, I read in the comments section under some of his videos that people are like, dude, this is like the pop punk album we've been waiting for since 2008. It is
100%.
Just so,
it's Blink reincarnate.
It really is. And he does it just, he has the right attitude. The melodies are there, just like, it's so catchy, it's so simple. And that's what good music is. It's catchy, it's simple, it's repeatable, it's upbeat. I mean, he really just knocks it out of the park. It's a brilliant, brilliant album.
What's interesting also about that album is him and a lot of other artists have started, even like he started originally in rock. He was playing Warped Tour back in like the mid-2000s and then went to rap and then back to rock. And you see that's like a lot of these people seem to be taking that trajectory these days.
Absolutely. Yeah, I actually, believe it or not, I played Warped Tour, which was really crazy. But just to date myself, when I performed, I only performed in three cities. Mm-hmm. And I was in the MySpace acoustic tent.
Interesting.
So, like, it was a while back, to say the least. But it was really fun.
Yeah. You were playing solo, or what were you?
Yeah, I was just doing an acoustic thing. And it was really cool. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it's for me, because I do concert photography also. So, I think the fourth show I shot was Warped Tour back in, I think it was 2015. And that was, like, I grew up, let's say, eventually, like, I started with, like, Jewish music, but eventually, like, Shinedown and Nickelback. And that classic, like, trajectory.
Oh, Nickelback.
And then, you got love it or hate it over there.
Yeah, but, exactly. Hey, then, everyone goes through that phase, okay? I'm not hating. Exactly. It's all good.
So then, like, I spent a day photographing, like, Black Veil Brides and Pierce the Veil and that, like, and Sleeping with Sirens. And that was, like, just so I stuck at the main stages of Warped Tour for that date. And, like, it opened a whole nother genre of music.
You know, absolutely. And, you know, that's the thing. You know, it's really interesting because, you know, if we're talking about this fusion between like rock and hip hop that I love so much. I mean, my first album is mainly rock music. The second album's all hip hop. You know, I'll tell you something. You know, one thing that I noticed. So like the band that really got everything started for me was Dashboard Confessional. Mm-hmm. I was really into emo music. I that's where I found my voice. Like I have a very emo type sound. Christopher Kraba, the lead singer of Dashboard, has always been my biggest inspiration. Especially as a lyricist, my God, he is a genius. And I could tell you that when I was listening to that, I was hearing the same pain that rappers were talking about. Mm-hmm. And I realized like this isn't that different. Like there are so many similarities in the genres. And by the way, I even talk about this with my patients. You know, it's really interesting how like, you have no idea how many of my clients come to me and they say, Charlie, I just want to be happy. You know, the problem with happiness, is that happiness is always outcome dependent, right? Meaning, so if I get paid via check, right? I go to my mailbox one day, there's a check in the mail, voila, I'm happy.
I'm happy, exactly.
But then the next day there's no check, then what? Mm-hmm. It's all about outcome, right? Now, the thing is, if we look at the arts, if we look at, you know, actually visual art and music and dance, you know, and we look at these incredible performances that are so moving to us, think about how many of them are really rooted in the emotion of happiness. Very few of them, actually. In fact, what defines good music and good art is all about the connection.
And like emotion and like this like depth, but it's like depth from pain almost all the time. A lot of it, like the songs that really hit come from a place of hurt, not from a place of joy.
Exactly. And that's why I call myself Hard Charlie. You know, it says in Hasidus, in Hasidic thought that a name is a handle of one soul. And one string that I see going through all of my music is this notion of hardship. All of my music is a response to the hardships and the struggles that I deal with, both externally, like things that I actually have to go through, but also internally. My second album is called Divided because I feel like I live in these two worlds. On the one hand, I want to be this super frumy Hasidic Jew that's just kind of like, you know, in the world of Torah and just like its purity and bliss. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, I'm listening to 8 hours of trauma a day as a therapist. And I'm listening to the most like, you know, painful things that people are going through. And it does feel very divided. And I also really like the secular world. I grew up in it. I mean, I like the music and I mean, if you told me like, look, never listen to Blink-182 again, I couldn't do it. You know, like that's a huge part of who I am.
Yeah.
So it is this division, but I also think that that's what makes Jewish people so unique.
I hear that.
Is that, you know, the Lubavitcher Rebbe says it very well. We have to be within, but above. Mm-hmm. There is a certain division that every Jewish person faces that, you know, on the one hand, we have these historical roots, these, you know, 5,000 plus year history that we have to be attached to. But on the other hand, we've got to live in the modern day while not sacrificing on any of our traditions. So it's like, it's a division. And that's something we have to be sensitive to.
Interesting. I wonder, like you're talking about, like with your patients, how like it's kind of this divided of half, like you're dealing with your own life, you're dealing with trauma. Like, do you think music, do you see with your patients that music plays a role in healing through mental health and stuff like that? Like, kind of in that other direction?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's really interesting. I was working in a psych hospital in Chicago, a very dangerous place. It's the hospital. I mean, look, no hate, but the average staff turnover there is like 3 months. Okay. It's a very intense place to work. I was there for 3 years. It's on the west side of Chicago. And it was interesting because when you would do an intake with the client, the clients were always asked, what's your coping skill? If you get triggered, if you get upset, like what can we do to calm you down? And every client says the exact same thing. What do they say? I listen to music. So when I told my clients, like, yo, I'm a rapper and a singer, they're like, no. And then I actually like spit something for them or actually like perform something. And they're like, wow, like all of a sudden you're not some random dude. You're like a person I could actually relate to. So, and it's actually, and even deeper, it says in Chassidus, and it's a very powerful concept that like music is an expression of the soul. This is actually where the entire notion of nigunim come from. A nigun is a Hasidic wordless melody. So like where these nigunim actually come from, it's believed that words, which are finite, limit the infinite expression of the soul. And hence there need to be these wordless melodies that really allow for like full expression. So, and that was one of the things that helped me become religious is I just love that concept. It was nigunim that really got me into Judaism more deeply. And the thing is that, when I see this in my clients, when I see that like music is soothing to them, it's something that builds connection. It's something that deepens things for them, that makes them meaningful for them. Yeah, it's extremely transformative. I do hip hop therapy with my clients,
Interesting.
I've had breakthroughs as a result of that. I had this one guy, yo, this was unbelievable. I had this one dude, one of my clients, I forgot what his name was. I want to say his name was like Kevin or something like that. Great guy. And he literally comes in and he's like, yo, Charles, like, I'm really struggling. And I'm like, okay, well, what's going on? He's like, I can't really put my finger on it. The only way I could describe it is it's like, it kind of feels like this J. Cole song. And I actually knew what song he was referring to. And I was like, oh, bro, I got that. And that song became a point of relation for us. So music is huge in psychotherapy if you know how to like actually use it as a tool.
No, that's pretty powerful. Like, I feel like it's crazy how music kind of, A, is a coping mechanism, like you talked about, or just like if you find that right lyric, you're able to communicate something to somebody just by playing them a song. You're like, I can't fully explain this to you, but if you listen to this song, this is exactly how I feel, or how you make me feel, or how anything. It's like really, like the lyrics and the melody together kind of convey that message that we don't always feel that we can use or express through words.
There is this amazing, so it's actually really interesting, crazy story. So Taking Back Sunday, I love Taking Back Sunday. They've always been one of my favorite bands. I have covers of theirs on my YouTube channel. Thing that was really crazy is that so they recorded an album that's called Live in Oran Sands. Okay. Now I don't know if you know what the Oran Sands is. The Oran Sands is an old synagogue that's in New York.
Really? That's
And
crazy.
ironically enough, I over Instagram I met this guy who, was interested in maybe helping me book some Jewish acts, whatever. Right now, COVID hit, so the whole thing has kind of fallen flat, but we're still in touch. Point is that we met at the Oran Sands,
That's
which to
crazy.
this day is like a really beautiful, incredible music venue, but it's an old shul. And the thing is that here is Taking Back Sunday, literally singing and performing in this old shul. And there's this great lyric from the song Cute Without the E. Why can't I feel anything from anyone other than you? Dude, it's so powerful.
It's
And the
crazy.
whole crowd sings it and you just get goosebumps. Like, ah, oh, it's just ah, oh, it feels so good,
Like, it doesn't
So
matter who they're referring to. Who knows who they're
yeah,
referring to? But
everyone
like,
has
you're in
that
a sh but
person.
like, you're in a shul also. It's like there's
Yeah,
like this
ah.
level of it's referring to God, and it's like this, that's crazy, like, way to think of it also, is like
Yeah, I love it.
how
I
that
love it. It's just
dynamic.
that exact thing. And you should look that up, by the way. Cute Without the E, Live at Oran Sands with Taking Back Sunday. That song is like a religious experience. It's so beautiful to listen to. So, yeah, I don't know. I love it.
No, I hear that. That's so crazy to think about that. Just like how you can find in any genre of music inspiration and messages. I feel like for me, like rock, what's powerful to me so much about rock versus a lot of other genres is how, especially like a full like band setup of rock, these are guys who've spent years together. They've lived their lives together, and this is literally their life experience through words in what they're conveying, which I think is pretty crazy.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because people ask me, like, you know, why I transitioned from rock to rap. And, you know, one of the, I think the big reason why is that, you know, what's cool about rap music that no one really pays attention to is that most rap verses have probably quadruple the number of words as a regular rock verse. Mm-hmm. Meaning rap allows for so much greater self-expression than a rock song. And for me, like, as you know, my life got, as I got older and my life got more and more complex, like I needed that additional expression.
Yeah. You have more to say. So you need a way to say it.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's the thing. I love rock. And again, if you could actually find ways to trim down what it is you need to say and just make it punch, mm-hmm. that's incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
But for me, yeah, being able to express what it is I'm feeling to the full extent that hip hop allows is just like an awesome, awesome thing.
I hear that. Why do you think that this fusion of rap and rock is becoming so, I don't know if mainstream is the right word, because I feel like it's still kind of like—
It is becoming mainstream, yeah. It's slowly but
surely. A little bit is like, has that underground feel to it a little bit. Like, it's not like you're like, this is the biggest artist in the world and I'm following it. Like, it still has enough of like an underground feel. Almost like what Warped Tour had 20 years ago is like what these kind of art acts are having now. But mm-hmm. like, why do you think that's where it looks like that those genres are going?
You know, it's really funny. When I was in high school, there were like two types of kids, okay? Like my peers were divided into two groups. You had the people who listened to hip hop and they dressed a particular way, they behaved a particular way. And then you had a group of people that listened to like punk music and they dressed a particular way and they behaved a particular type of way. And I was kind of a social butterfly. Like I really kind of vacillated between these two groups. And I feel like there's such similarity. You know, both of them are kind of like, you know, rebellious in nature. And that really, I mean, my God, every teenager is a rebel, but I feel like I never outgrew that. You know, mm-hmm. I've always kind of felt like a black sheep. And I don't know that both genres of music really like, they invite all the black sheep home. They're like, come be here. Like, this is where you belong.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily fit in. And so like that really worked. And I think that's part of the reason why these genres are blending is because ultimately I think they're attracting a very similar mindset that is kind of upheld by a lot of people, regardless of the spectrum. Like everyone has this kind of like rebellious, yet I want to connect with other rebels, other black sheep. And I think it's just the mindset of people that kind of merges these genres together. They're also not terribly different. I mean, my God, they're heavily driven by rhythm. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know.
It's pretty interesting to think about that way. Cause I feel like it's like the way you're putting it is like very much like, I never thought of it exactly that way, but it kind of puts it in the way that like what it actually is. It's like they have this underlying rhythm, which like, I think like you mentioned earlier, like growing up on all these different instruments, like you play guitar, you play drums, mm-hmm. you play other instruments as well. And I feel like that also is what all these people who are fusing these genres did. They grew up playing that punk scene,
a bunch of things.
They're going now. They're messing around with other things and like fusing these things together. And I feel like did playing all these instruments kind of propel you into fusing these things as well? Because you didn't just come from one instrument. Like you kind of had all these.
It definitely made the fusion easier. There's no question about that. You know, when you have all these different instruments to kind of choose from, and then especially when you move into the electronic world and you know you start producing beats and things like that. I mean, it's really incredible. I mean, like the options are limitless. I think every beginning musician kind of struggles with this, like, how do I create something that hasn't been done already? Mm-hmm. So when you kind of know all these different instruments and you kind of see how music is supposed to come together in a song, like how all these different instruments and these different synths can actually be combined mm-hmm. to something original, it just makes that process so much easier.
I hear that. So what's your process, I guess, from like a songwriting perspective? Like here, like you take all these instruments, you have like this strong background from an instrumentation side. How does that flow into in the writing side and creating that way?
You know, I'll tell you something. I have a good friend His name is Victor Tapia. He actually, he's an Italian Jewish guy. I met him in a yeshiva program. He is a classically trained opera singer turned world famous DJ. You should look him up. He goes by Gosh Father, and he is just incredible. He, like, everything he touches is gold. I mean, like, I'm a psychotherapist before I'm a musician. He's a real musician. And I mean, like, when you listen to his songs, you just hear how professional he really is. And, you know, it's crazy. He was telling me that one of the most important things when it comes to writing music is not reinventing the wheel. You know, one of the things that I have found that has helped my creative process so much is by listening to the music that I love and then figuring out how to basically do the same thing, but with my own twist on it.
I hear that.
And so whenever I write a song, I'm never starting from a truly blank canvas. I'm always starting with something that, like, you know, has already been created, and I'm taking elements. And that's what it is. You know, Victor always talks about the importance of being a good connoisseur, like knowing elements of a song and putting them together in such a way that improves the sound overall.
Mm-hmm. I think that's also like the beauty of the MGK album we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
He took all that Blink influence. He's had literally Travis Barker playing the drums, and he basically just said, here, this is my take on it.
And that is the forward propulsion of music at its finest. You know, it's about building on the people who came before you. And that's what I like. And look, if you're wise enough and if you're brilliant enough to come up with your own thing that works, power to you. But I'm not that smart.
I was listening to some of your stuff on SoundCloud, and like your song Cliff Diving literally it feels like a Blink song.
Totally, totally.
That jumped off to me right off the page. I'm like, he was inspired by Blink to make this song.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Nailed it on the head. So, and that's the thing. And at the end of the day, like, you know, when you kind of follow a structure that's already been defined for you, and you could add your own elements and everything like that, but you know, it's even how I do therapy. Okay. So I have this amazing way of doing therapy. Hold on to your seat for this one. Mm-hmm. Things that work, let's do. Things that don't work, let's not do. Okay. Like, it's really, really simple. That's, I tell this to my clients. It's like, if you know this is something that works for you, let's do more of that. And if that doesn't work for you, you're not getting the outcome that you want from it, don't do it. It's the same thing with music.
Yeah.
If I know that something is working, it's a sound that is mainstream, that sells, that's, you know, attractive to people, that people can vibe to, like, I want to do that. I don't want to try to do something that, you know, that doesn't necessarily work.
I hear that. It's interesting that music kind of, like, for you especially, like, you're kind of taking and playing with what you have, what your inspirations are, but like even like more targeted than just like, oh, this guy inspires me, now I'm going to go on and do my own thing. It's like, this guy inspires me, let me find a way to fuse that into what I'm creating.
Exactly. Exactly. And I mean, and it makes my life easier as the musician, but it's also good for, you know, the fans, because I could say, like, I was inspired by XYZ, and then they listen to it and it's like, yeah, that actually sounds like XYZ.
Yeah.
And you know, it makes that bridge all the more simple. So I don't know, but yeah, it's a really cool process. It's a really cool process. I love the creative process. And you know, it's interesting. I talk to my clients frequently about the importance of creativity. Mm-hmm. You know, I really view creativity as an expression of spirituality. Mm-hmm. You know, it explains that God gets the greatest nachas, that he gets the greatest, like, pride and joy mm-hmm. from human beings when we emulate him and become just like he is a creator, when we become creative, God rejoices in that.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, it was crazy. You know, my mom just sent for Hanukkah, she sent my two kids a big box of, like, books and everything like that. And inscribed in many of the books that she sent me were letters and messages that my grandfather had written me when I was a little boy. Mm-hmm. And you realize that the things that we create outlive us, you know?
It's powerful.
I think deep down inside, like, every human being has this desire for, like, immortality. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the greatest things that we fear is not necessarily death, but we fear being forgotten. And so when you create something, like, it gives you that taste of immortality. You know, I sleep very well at night knowing that if, God forbid, anything ever happens to me, like, my sons are going to be able to listen to my music and they're going to have an understanding of who their father was. You know, like, thank God, you know, I've had, I take a lot of pride in the fact that I've never written a song that didn't have a purpose. Mm-hmm. Like every song that I've ever written has been like a diary to me. Like there is some aspect of my life that's being captured in that song.
Yeah.
And that's a really important thing, you know, and I think everyone could benefit from this. Anyone who's listening to this, like, especially during COVID, COVID is like the perfect time to like actually start tapping into one's creativity. It's the time to pick up a new instrument. It's the time to, you know, buy some paint and a brush. It's the time to try something new. And I find that people who are actually doing that and exerting themselves to do that are dealing with this way better than people who are just kind of like, I don't know what to do with myself. You know, I'm spending too much time with my husband and wife and with my kids and I want to pull my hair out. Like, you know, and these are my patients. I tell them like, dude, do something for yourself. Like be creative.
Yeah.
You know, any person can create art. Any person can play music. I am not that great of a musician. I just put in hours and I learned a craft and I learned a process that works.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I feel the same way with photography. I got super lucky with that. I got to photograph two shows. Actually, there were two like drive-in live, like one was a drive-in, one was a like park live show. I got to see Smith and Myers, which is like Shinedown.
Nice.
Their acoustic band. I got to be on stage for them performing Second Chance, which is one of the craziest experiences of my life. And like I saw Big Boy in Centennial Olympic Park in Atlanta.
So
just
awesome.
Being able to, like those days, like after I had that experience, it was like, okay, I can manage another few weeks of COVID. Like I've had this creative expression and now you're off and running to the races.
Yeah. And I mean, again, 100%, like, I don't know, when you just have that ability to just make something, there's something so gratifying about that to people. And even if it's crappy. Okay, dude, my first song, I listened to it. It was like A, overdramatic, but B, just terrible. And then like I saw the next song after that and the song after that. And I realized like, wow, there's a real progression here. You know, we have to not be so judgmental towards our early work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really interesting. There's a book that I recommend to a lot of patients. It's called The Artist's Way. It's it's by a woman. I want to say her name is Margaret something. But basically what it is an 8-week intensive course. It's a textbook. It's an 8-week intensive course into being more accepting of what you create.
Uh-huh.
And it's really cool. How she kind of begins the process is she tells the reader, and I've done this before, that you have to write 3 pages a day.
Mm-hmm.
In a notebook, you take a notebook, you have to write 3 pages a day.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, okay, that sounds kind of simple. It's not easy to do. Okay, and you just want a flow of thoughts. It doesn't matter if it's good. You could write blah, 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 and fill a page doing that. But you have to write the 3 pages every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot say enough how that process has helped me over so many obstacles that I've endured over the course of my life.
Mm-hmm.
When I face job loss, when I face any type of loss or any type of pain or any type of letdown, getting back to the notebook, getting back to the draft email, which is like my favorite thing to write lyrics in, like, you know, getting back to that stuff and just producing, even if it's crappy, but being non-judgmental about it. And that's really what it is. You know, I don't know if you've ever heard of this. There's something called the Jerry Seinfeld method.
I have not heard of it.
Someone once went to Jerry Seinfeld and said, you know, how do you write such good material? And Seinfeld actually said, it's not that I write good material. It's that I write more material than any other person. So this is his method. Listen to how brilliant this is. He says, what I do is he gets a calendar, and every day that he sits and writes jokes for 2 hours, he puts a big X on that day. And his goal is to make the longest chain of X's that he can.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is about being consistent. And that's kind of what it is. You know, it was crazy. My rap career started taking off when there was this like 6-month period where like every day, and I mean every day, for like, you know, half hour to an hour, I did something related to my hip hop career.
Uh-huh.
Something, whether it's sending messages to someone or writing some lyrics or writing some new backing tracks or making a video or whatever, every day for 6 months, just, you know, half hour to an hour, the progress that I made was way beyond anything I could have ever imagined.
Pretty powerful to focus your thoughts in that way and just go with it.
Well, and look, at the end of the day, you know, it's interesting. And I think this is one of the secrets to like Jewish survival in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, So I specialize in addictions, and very frequently what happens when I work with addicts, a lot of counselors will talk about this. You know, they'll say that there's this roller coaster of life, and the thing that addicts and alcoholics struggle with is staying on that roller coaster, right? So, you know, we'll reach a peak, a zenith, and things are so good. The addict and alcoholic is like, man, I'm going to get off and get even higher. And so they get off the roller coaster, they get high. It's not good. Mm-hmm. The roller coaster plummets. And let's say there's a low, there's an nadir. It's just things are not good. The addict gets off and says, screw it. What do I even need to have to, why should I even stay on the roller coaster? And again, they get high. So of course, the famous thing that you hear working in a rehab is that everyone's saying, yeah, you got to learn how to stay on that roller coaster. Don't peace out. Here's something that Judaism comes and says. Judaism comes and says, you don't even have to be on the roller coaster. Mm-hmm. It's about consistency. Okay? It's the daily sacrifice. It's the carbon tami. That every day, it doesn't matter if it's a good day or a bad day, I'm going to daven. Doesn't matter if it's a good day or a bad day, I'm going to act like a father and act like a good Jew and act like a husband. You know, every single day, I'm just going to be consistent. I'm going to chug along. And that's how people thrive. It's about building that consistency. When you have consistency, you don't feel the highs and the lows as much anymore. You know, so.
That's super powerful. I know for me, like going back to like, when Shul started opening and you were able to then go again, daven, not at home, but go somewhere to daven mm-hmm. during the pandemic, it like, it gave that level of consistency through the day that you almost didn't realize you had beforehand.
Yeah. And look, we need that to thrive. I mean, that's really the case. As human beings, we need to have consistency because what consistency does for us. So the thing that human beings hate more than anything else is change. People do not like change. So we find consistency to be very safe. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, ultimately, especially at a time like COVID, where there's so much unknown, there's so much stuff that is up in the air. When we're able to build consistency for ourselves, I can't even say how transformative that is for people. Mm-hmm.
You talked before about, let's say, Nigunim, and like now we're talking about consistency. Were those some of the things that started you on your path to becoming religious? Like what piqued your interest? I know like you were at Chabad in college, but like, is there something that particularly piqued your interest to start it? And then how did that journey go?
Yo, that's such a good question. Actually, ironically enough, so the first time I ever met my mashpia, okay, which other people refer to as like a Rebbe. For me, I mean, the Lubavitcher Rebbe is my Rebbe. So my mashpia, I have two mashpim. Mm-hmm. One of them is Rabbi Zalman Teichtel at the University of Kansas. The other one is Mirchai Ben Chiyun in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Zalman is like my big brother. Mirchai is kind of like my dad. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, you know, when I first met Zalman, we're talking like the first time I ever laid eyes on the man. One of the first things I said to him is like, yo, I'm a rapper. Okay, yes, I was that big of a tool. Uh-huh. And the thing is my rabbi says, yeah, you're a rapper. Well, I know Modest Yahoo. I don't think he knew Modest Yahoo. Mm-hmm. He's like, I know Modest Yahoo. I'm like, yo, I love Modest Yahoo. Mm-hmm. And just for me, the rabbi created this class that was called Understanding Modest Yahoo. It was like me and like three other people who used to show up.
Yeah.
But that's how I began learning Hasidus.
That's fascinating.
Like Modest Yahoo, like we would analyze his lyrics. And like, that was my kind of like foot in the door with Chabad was like learning Modest Yahoo lyrics, like the early ones. And to be honest with you, that had a major, major impact on how I became religious.
Those early albums are so deep.
Oh,
so
God, they're deep. Unbelievable. They're unbelievable. And you know, beyond that, every single time I write a song these days, I always ask myself, like, could a rabbi like actually teach a class around this song? Like, could they actually do it? And I that's always something that's in my mind. Just like I've always had this dream that just like, you know, my rabbi sat and taught me Modest Yahoo lyrics. Like, I've mm-hmm. always had this dream that maybe one day there's a rabbi out there who's going to be like, yo, we're going to learn some Hard Charlie lyrics today and see what kind of lessons we can cull from it.
Yeah, no, that's...
So, yeah, man, that's always been huge. That's a great question.
Are there any songs that from those classes that speak to you more than any other that if you were to sit back on it?
Interesting. That's a good one. Yeah, you know what? The number one song for me probably is Chop 'em Down. Mm-hmm. By Modest Yahoo. And the reason why that is, that verse that he quotes in the Talmud, from the forest itself comes the handle to the axe, literally guides my entire career mm-hmm. as a therapist. Think about it. From the forest itself comes the handle to the axe. What that actually means is that from the forest, from the obstacle, comes the handle to the axe lies the solution to taking down the obstacle. Okay, so in essence, you know, when a person comes to see a therapist, and this is what makes my job really hard, but also really fun, mm-hmm. is that, you know, the first job that a therapist has to accomplish is figure out, like, what's actually going on with this person, mm-hmm. you know, especially addicts. So it's like, for instance, we always say addiction is just a symptom. There is always stuff going on underneath. And so the thing is, that was really crazy, is that I'll get like an addict as a client and they'll tell me, yeah, you know, I'm abusing this substance and that substance, or maybe I'm gambling, whatever. The thing is that that's not what the problem is.
To find that underlying trauma. That's the goal is to find that.
Exactly what's underneath it. But I got that mindset from Modest Yahoo's song.
It's pretty crazy.
Like, when I was learning the lyrics to Chop Them Down, like, I remember my rabbi explaining this concept to me, and that kind of paved the way for my entire career.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Unbelievable. But no, I mean, it's had a major impact on me. Like, I can't even begin to tell you. It's been huge for me.
The song's always been a song that sat with me. Mm-hmm. The way you explained it right there is like, it's such a simple way to explain it, yet it makes that song like move to another level.
Absolutely. It's unbelievable. I mean, like, it's just incredible. And as I reflect on how that song has influenced me, I'm like, whoa. Like,
yeah,
it literally
put your career path and put everything, like, it's all
from a song.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, we don't always realize the impact that music has on us. And especially as a musician, we don't always understand the impact that our music has on our listeners. You know, I'll tell you, you know, it was crazy. I used to be on purevolume.com. Now I don't even know what it is, but back in the day, it was one of the first places that artists were able to list their music. And so I posted my song Cliff Diving on there.
Yeah.
And I got this message from a girl, I want to say she was in Scotland, mm-hmm. who was going through this bad breakup. And she's like, yo, I listened to that song like 10 times a day. You have no idea how much it's helped me. And I realized, like, yo, that, and that song came from a tremendous place of pain for me. You know, I wrote that song, basically, it was a very bad breakup that I went through. I went through a couple years of depression as a result of that breakup. And what was born from that sadness was that song. And like the fact that some other person was benefiting from it across the ocean.
Yeah.
Like that was, my God, it made the whole process worth it for me.
I was going to say, you know? It gives a level of depth to that pain that you're like, somebody else doesn't need to go through it because I went through it. Exactly. And I've shown them the way out. Music is literally like a map. Mm-hmm. It literally is, here's a map to get through the problem that you're dealing with, because I already did that, so you don't need to.
Beautifully said. Yeah, that's exactly it. And it, I don't know, it just, when you have that level of connection, we always talk about the connection from listener to artist, but it's another level from artist to listener. I think a lot of music consumers don't understand the impact that they have on the artists themselves.
Yeah, no, I still remember right before the pandemic, I saw Skillet in New York City, mm-hmm. and they... John Cooper, who's the lead singer of Skillet, went on this, like, probably for a minute and a half talking about how this girl he met right before the show about a song that basically walked her back from the ledge. I don't remember the exact song, but like hearing artists speak about that to a crowd of thousands of people. First of all, for that person who went through that experience and shared it, it's like, it gives them, I feel like, a level of comfort that, look, like, this is something that can help everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know. It's really cool.
Yeah, I hear that. So let's transition a bit. Do you think there's room for music, Jewish music, to transition into the mainstream in a sense and hit mainstream audiences, but keeping these themes? Like Modest Yahoo obviously did that, but do you see room for that?
Of course, absolutely. I mean, my God, look at Nisim, look at L'Chaim OG. Like, and by the way, I think hip hop is the way to go. I mean, like, everyone listens to hip hop these days, and like, you know, it's all over the radio and everything like that. So yeah, I mean, I absolutely do. And you know, it's very interesting. It's written somewhere that the answers to every question are in the Torah. Mm-hmm. The answers to every question in life. And it's interesting that sometimes when I'm facing these big forks in the road in my life and I'm really debating, like, how do I proceed? I always find the answer in Torah, in a Hasidic discourse, in a commentary, in something. I find an answer that I'm looking for. And so much of Jewish music is based on Torah.
Interesting.
So, you know, considering that people are listening to music in search of that connection, I really think that not only can Jewish music enter the mainstream, I think it could benefit the mainstream.
Interesting.
I think that there is, it's a necessity almost. And I think Jewish artists, when we write, we should not have in mind just a Jewish audience, but we should have in mind a mainstream audience who could potentially benefit from what it is that we've created. And that's the thing. So, I mean, it's all about that mindset. But yeah, absolutely. I pray to God that more Jewish music enters into the mainstream. And Jewish art in general, you know, I don't know about you, but I love going to art museums. That's something that always makes me very happy. And what's very frustrating is when you go to art museums, there's very little Jewish artwork out there. You have your Marc Chagalls, but outside of that, what is there?
Yeah.
You know? And so I just, if you want to know one of my dreams, like real talk, yeah. Like one of the things that I dream of that I don't know if I'll ever be able to do, but it's something that I really genuinely dream of. You know, it's always been my dream. I've worked with a lot of guys who grow up in the yeshiva system and everything like that. And for whatever reason, they don't feel like it fits them, you know? And unfortunately, a lot of these boys end up distancing themselves from Judaism, which is not an ideal outcome in any sense. And I have this cool idea. I was always thinking it would be unbelievable. What if there was a fine arts yeshiva where it's like half the day you learn and the other half of the day you're engaged in art, you know, you're painting, you're dancing, you're singing, you're playing instruments, stuff like that. And I just think about how healthy that blend would be for people. And now we could literally take the content that we've imbibed from, you know, the Talmud, from Torah, from Chassidus, whatever, from the things that we're learning, and actually translate that creatively. I just feel like, yo, if someone created something like that, we could help a lot of Jewish people, and we could put some really good stuff out there that would hopefully make a positive influence.
Yeah, I hear that. It's interesting because that the way you just described like that yeshiva concept is the same way like you were describing. I never thought about the way that Jewish music is like taking just verses from the Torah and stuff like that and fusing that into music, because I always kind of in some way thought of that, I wouldn't say as a negative, but almost like a negative. Like, come on, dude, you can't write your own lyrics. Like, you just got to take from. But like that's a new way I never thought to look at it of like. But you're taking the truth and you're fusing that into music. And I think that's pretty powerful way to look at that, that it's eye opening.
And that's the thing. Ultimately, I like how you said the truth, because I'll tell you something. That's all people are looking for. You know, I see people at their most vulnerable on a daily basis. Okay. And I could tell you that what all of my clients have in common, they're just looking for some truth. That's all they want. They just want some, you know, unbiased feedback. That's not, you know, they want unbiased feedback that may break them, but is not coming from a place of negativity. I might say some pretty harsh things to my clients, but they know that it's coming from a place of love and purity and support. You know, they need to hear these things, but that's all that people are looking for. They just want truth. They just want to know, what is my reality? And the only way we could come to understand our own realities is through other people. You know,
I hear that.
So music forges a huge part of that. You know, I think the message that most music conveys that people love so much is that you're not alone in the boat. You know, and I think that if we say you're not alone in the boat, and look, here's Torah, here's some truth to not only give you compassion but to also guide you.
Yeah,
that's next level, and that's why I think Jewish music can really like. You know, completely reinvent music as we know it as an overall genre. You know, I don't know. There's a part of me that wishes that we can get artists who are actually genuine. You know, what drives me crazy about rap is that, you know, artists present themselves as these gangsters who are so wealthy and blah, 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 blah. I don't care about that. I want to know what your struggles are.
Yeah.
I want to know what hurts you. I want to know what, you know, you're trying to deal with and manage and overcome. That's what inspires me.
I think that's why people flock to these two genres. Particularly, you have somebody like NF, for example.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Like people flock to that. When people feel that something is real, they're gonna flock to it. That's why rock and rap. I was gonna fuse the two words together in my own saying, and I couldn't even separate the two. But people flock to those two genres because those are the two realest genres of music that exist these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, that's a big thing. And I just hope that, you know, there are more people who get inspired to create. Jewish people, you know, we make up such a small percentage of the world, and yet we're all so deeply connected. And music is a great way to bridge those gaps. Mm-hmm. And I hope that, you know, for me, like, I wasn't that frum, I wasn't that religious, but I heard a Modest Yahoo song that my rabbi explained to me, and all of a sudden, like, I wanted a piece of that. And I just hope that there are many more experiences like that for people. You know, I hope that you can hear a song sung by like a religious person that comes from a place of purity that could really inspire people to make positive changes in their lives.
Yeah, no, that's deep and heavy. And I think that's what we all want in music. Like, if we can get a point like that, that we can see somebody Jewish who's on the radio living their life the way that they're living it, but they're putting out music that can affect the world. Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're shooting for.
100%. We touched a little bit before earlier on some of your inspirations, like touched on Dashboard, we touched on Blink, we touched on Modest Yahoo. Are there any other artists in the Jewish or secular world that inspire you in your creative process?
Man, there are a ton. I don't know. I really, Eminem is always going to be one of the greatest lyricists alive. I mean, like, you're not going to necessarily ever find better than him. Mike Portnoy, I don't know, like, I don't know, he's really incredible. I don't know, there are lots of artists that have kind of been here and there. One thing that I find myself doing these days, you know, I'm very interested in certain producers. I just found this one, Monarch something or other, on TikTok. Mm-hmm. And she's this female producer who just writes beautiful lo-fi beats. And I was like, that's probably going to be the next thing that I write. I'm literally, I have, you know, my phone right here. Probably when I'm done with therapy tonight, I'm going to start trying to produce something similar to what she's creating. I think she goes by Little Monarch, but yeah, she is fantastic. I don't know. Nisim is right now my biggest competition in the Jewish rap world. And I want to compete with him. But the thing is, it's like, I've actually met him and spent a Shabbos with him. And dude,
yeah,
he's such a nice person. He's so incredible. He's so inspiring that literally I'm like, I can't compete with that. Like, who? Come on now. Like, it's easy. He's unbelievable. You can't.
Yeah, no, it's.
How do you even? Come on. So yeah, Nisim is just, he's the man. L'chaim OG, Zacharia Levine, he's a great guy. And also has been putting out music like a beast. There are a few rappers that I got to call out because they're my boys and I love them and they're creating great stuff. Lev King D is unbelievable. Judah Fire. I don't know, man. Like, there's a whole crew in LA. Kosha Dills, of course, just came out with this great album, No One Cares But You, and it is a phenomenal album. He is really, really good at what he does. I don't know, man. There are a variety of guys who are out there. John Perry. Yo, John Perry is insane. Literally, he's out of any Jewish rapper out there right now, his sound is just ridiculous. John Perry's insane. Another one is, he goes by Avraham, but without the A's. He's mm-hmm. on Instagram, and he just posts these little song segments, and the guy, he sounds like a Jew. I mean, Drake is Jewish, but he sounds like the religious Moroccan version of Drake, and he's so good.
Interesting.
Like, he's so good. Like, I would collaborate with that guy in a heartbeat. I would collaborate with any of these artists in a heartbeat, to be honest with you. But, like, you know, all these guys are just, I really see them as the future of Jewish music. And I really hope that, and I saw you also had, like, Tefillah Music yeah. on here last time. And, you know, he's also incredible, like, an amazing, amazing guy. And that's the thing that's really fun, is that when you actually meet these other musicians and you get to know them as people, the thing that's really exciting about Jewish musicians is that when you actually meet these people, just like you listen to their music and you're really inspired and you're moved, like, they really are that incredible in real life.
Yeah, I hear that.
That's the thing that's really awesome. Because sometimes you meet, you know, a singer or something, whatever, and it's like, eh, okay, that's nice. But no, like, these guys are just, like, they're nuts. They're next level.
That's so true. We were talking before about all these people that are, let's say, people are putting out stuff on Instagram or TikTok or whatever they're putting out. What kind of stuff have you been working on throughout the pandemic?
Musically, you know, really just writing new rap music. You know, I've been writing some trap stuff, actually.
Interesting.
I have some really cool stuff that I'm cooking up. I have a lot of pieces of songs. I have like a verse here, a chorus there. It's now just a matter of putting everything together and completing things. But it's been a fun process. You know, I could tell you that during the first half of the pandemic, like most people, I was just trying to survive.
Yeah.
So I was building my private practice and everything. But just recently, I just moved into this house in early September.
Awesome.
Ever since I've been in this house, you know, I've been able to start writing music again. And it's been really fun. It's been really fun. I'm really pleased with what's coming out. And God willing, you know, there should be good new things coming from me very soon.
That's awesome. Where can people find you on Instagram or SoundCloud or wherever?
Everything is Hard Charlie, HardCharlie. It's all one word. You can go to hardcharlie.com. There are links to literally everything on the homepage. All my music is up there. Music videos are up there. You know, not only like learn about the music, but also learn about, you know, my journey and my struggle, because I'm hoping that people can relate to that. You know, I have been through a lot, and at the end of the day, you know, I think that's what we're all kind of looking for right now, is everyone is very, very alone. And when you learn that there's a person who's like you, there's something really gratifying about it. Everything is Hard Charlie. You can find me on Instagram. My YouTube is Hard Charlie 01. Mm-hmm. And
somebody got there before you, I guess.
Well, no, I actually have the old Hard Charlie handle. I just don't have access to it anymore because it was linked to this old AOL email from like when I was 16. So what could I tell you? So it's Hard Charlie 01. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
I'm all over the place. Definitely check out my music video, The Rock. I shot in three different states. I used a very well-known videographer. His name is Sense Hernandez. He's worked with J-Lo before. He is a genius. Sense Hernandez is one of the greatest video like directors of our generation. And mm-hmm. I could say that very confidently. Everything he touches is genius. It was a huge honor to work with him. He is just unbelievable. And that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you, coming on.
It's a huge pleasure. Thank you so much. And we'll definitely be in touch.
100%.
Take care.
That's awesome. Take care.
Deuces.
Deuces.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. For more conversations like the one you just heard, please follow us on Instagram at Our Faith Through Music and subscribe in your favorite podcasting app. Thank you so much for listening and have a great rest of your day.